Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we continue the Coursera Effect and find out how online education is changing the world. Hi friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is February 22nd and we're on day two of our education article. I'm Naomi, back in the studio with Amanda and Bill. Welcome back, everyone.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
So, Amanda, how did we begin our article yesterday?
Well, we met Christos Porias. He's 16 years old, coming from Greece. And we just learned about how he spent his time on the computer learning through free classes, different skills from computer science, and how he really improved his skills and went on to do some amazing things.
Okay. So he basically just had his computer and not a lot of other resources and managed to learn some very useful skills.
Yeah, he was very productive with his time. Instead of playing games or just kind of socializing for hours and hours, what he did is he tapped into a class that was being taught by a Stanford University professor, Andrew Ng, and interesting class, a 16-year-old boy and teenager in Greece is attending this online class about machine learning, a new discipline in computer science. Good for the kid. That's great that he was doing this.
Yeah, interesting that that's what he picked. We found out that machine learning is basically a way of using computers to analyze big sets of information. You can get all these statistics or numbers or facts, but it can be hard to understand what they mean. And so some computer programs help us to learn what sets of data mean a little quicker. And so he's been trying that out, and he's been playing with all kinds of interesting information. But we found out, how exactly did he learn about this machine learning?
Well, he learned it through an online platform, which Andrew Ng, which was one of the professors at Stanford University, he was teaching through this online platform.
Okay, so that brought us into this concept of this online platform, which of course is Coursera.
Right, it's Coursera. We're going to learn a lot more about Coursera today and tomorrow. Exactly what is this Coursera, and actually how it is part of the ever-evolving online education option. And actually, it might be leading to some disruptive changes in education, traditional education as we know it.
Yes, we have talked about this topic before, how traditional schools might need to start getting a little bit nervous or possibly just adapting, because online education is definitely changing things. And we found out just at the end of yesterday exactly how in the last 6 months or so things have really started to change.
That's right. We've seen a lot of funding coming into online education, and we've also seen a lot of people drawn to enrolling into online education. In fact, we mentioned that at least six figures of people were enrolling online, which means tens of thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Yeah, we also got some elite professors coming online to teach, some of the top names, and so that is getting people's attention. No longer is it just no-name schools, people we never heard of before. We've got the top shelf people, we say. Mm-hmm. And then also we are incorporating online some things such as like social networking and video, which, you know, that's people draw. They are drawn to that. And if they can combine education with the networking and the video, that's going to hook them.
Right, because one of the objections to online learning in the past was, well, then it's just you and your computer, and that's not very fun, and you're not getting that classroom interaction. But video and social networking kind of allay those fears. They sort of change that objection, don't they?
Right. It becomes, like we said, more social. So you are actually getting more conversation going on, discussion, the things that they say were not good if you spend time with just your computer. Now we're actually seeing some amazing things happen.
Particularly because you don't just have like 19 other people in your class anymore either.
No, I mentioned yesterday teaching online classes, and I had anywhere between 10 to 15 students there once a week for a couple of hours. But we're going to learn today that Professor Ng has a lot more students than I ever had.
He does. So let's find out about that as we begin our reading for today on page 35.
No profits yet. Ng's course in machine learning attracted 104,000 enrollees around the world. Ng was amazed. It would take me 250 years to teach this many people at Stanford, he says. Just 1 month into the course, Ng and his Stanford colleague, Daphne Koller, decided to leave their tenured faculty posts and dive into online teaching full-time. They launched their company, Coursera, with a $16 million U.S. dollar round of venture funding. The backers will have to wait a while before they recoup their investment. If Coursera does start making money, it is unlikely to have the field to itself. Still, it is the first to offer top-drawer courses in humanities and the social sciences, a particular bugaboo for online learning in the past. It has also managed to team up with more colleges than any of its rivals, a total of 9, including Princeton, Michigan, and the University of Pennsylvania.
Okay, so we see an ominous title to this little section. When I say ominous, I mean it's sort of a little scary. It sounds a little bit negative. What is it?
No profits, dot, 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 yet.
Oh, well, that yet does make it a little more hopeful, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay, how do we begin?
We see that Ng's course in machine learning attracted 104,000 enrollees around the world.
So that's a pretty big class. My whole university didn't have that many students.
Yeah, that is that's an amazing number. Professor Ng was amazed also. Now, just to go back, we learned yesterday machine learning being this emerging discipline in computer science that analyzes large batches of data. 104,000 people signed up for this course. You would never think that.
No.
Yeah.
All right, so a very, very, very big class. And, of course, as you said, Ng was amazed. And part of the reason why is that he's able to put it into his own kind of perspective.
That's right. He said it would take him 250 years to teach this many people at Stanford. To have that amount of students coming through his school, he would need 250 years. And we know, generally, our lifespan is not even that long.
By far. Okay, so basically he's doing the impossible.
He is doing the impossible. He's reaching out. And, you know, those students would have to be at Stanford physically. But here now he's reaching out around the world to students everywhere. So, and then we continue there by seeing that just 1 month into the course, Ng and his Stanford colleague, Daphne Koller, they decided to leave their tenured faculty positions.
Wow. Oh, very interesting, because having a gig teaching at Stanford, so to speak, having this position teaching at Stanford, that is, to use another idiom, that's nothing to sneeze at.
This is actually, Naomi, yeah, to put it in terms, this is the peak of an academic career. Almost all academics, professors, would be aiming at a tenured position at Stanford or Harvard or Yale, the tenured position being one where you actually have been granted – essentially, you're guaranteed a job for life when you are tenured. So you're part of the fold, and they can't get rid of you unless you do something really stupid.
Or unless you leave.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Which in this case, we see that they did decide to do.
Right, and they dove into online teaching full time.
That's right. When we dive into something, it means we become immersed in it completely. Think of the picture of you diving into water, which means you go completely into the water.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they just jumped in. They really took a risk here, didn't they?
Yeah, they did take a risk, but I bet these two are pretty good at risk assessment. And they probably looked at the pros and the cons, and they wouldn't leave a tenured position at Stanford if they didn't think that, hey, this has got a lot of potential as far as for the future. Not only potential, not just financial potential, but also it's an expression of themselves. It's their creation. They can make this thing anything they want. One thing that they get out of leaving their position at Stanford, they don't have to deal with all the administrative roles and follow all the other guidelines that have been laid out for them.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So they launched their own company, Coursera, which is, of course, what we've been talking about. How did they launch this company? When you start off a company, I mean, you can't just sort of walk into work one day, right?
Oh, they went around and they passed the hat. They went walking down the street asking for money and – I'm just kidding. They actually got $16 million of venture funding. So I just touched on that yesterday, and that's actually where venture capitalists, people who invest in upstarts, actually put money into the business because they see potential in it.
Okay. If you were a venture capitalist, would you fund something like this?
I would. Yeah. I would, I think, because I've seen just gradually how it's become more popular. And so, yeah, I think I would.
Okay. Mm. Bill, what about you?
I would. Great example I could think of just recently within the last couple of years. Of course, Facebook had several venture capitalists invest in them. One gentleman I read about years ago, maybe 7, 8 years ago, he put $5 million into it, right? And I think it turned into $4
billion. Wow.
So that's what they are looking for. That's why they would gamble $1 million, $5 million, right, $10 million on something like this.
I have to be honest. I would be kind of reluctant just because I still don't quite see how they're going to start making money in this company. And that's something that is actually a factor for these investors as well, as we see in the next paragraph.
That's right. We see the backers, and they are the people that put money into or support it, usually with money, they will have to wait a while before they recoup their investment. Now, to recoup something means to get their money back or recover the money.
Okay.
Good question, Naomi.
Yeah.
Good question.
Thank you.
our section starts off, no profits yet, right?
Right.
I'm thinking of Instagram. We did the article on Instagram. Mm-hmm. No profits yet. I'm even thinking of Facebook. Facebook's not making that much money. You have every right to be skeptical. I will say this for our listeners. One reason these guys do this, they don't even need to make money. If they go public with their stock offering, that's where they will make their money. Even if they never make a dime, they might make their money in a stock offering.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. A little bit complicated. So we won't get into that right now. But if Coursera does start making money, or I should say maybe even if it does start making money, there's still another issue.
That's right. It is unlikely to have the field to itself. So this area of online education that Coursera is in, possibly there will be more competition coming in to this field.
Right. And as we've been talking about, this has been up and coming for many years now. So, of course, there's a lot of people interested in offering online education. However, Coursera does have a couple of unique things about it.
I really like this. Still, it is the first to offer top drawer courses in humanities and social sciences. And first, top drawer, that is actually means like the top quality, the best of the best. So we talked about elite yesterday.
Okay, what are the humanities and social sciences?
Well, humanities are things like your literature, history, psychology majors, things like that. And then in the social sciences, we have sociology and anthropology.
Okay, so the kinds of things that might be a little trickier to learn online. And we see that in the next section. It's a particular bugaboo for online learning in the past. In other words, a recurring problem. This isn't a very common word, so don't worry about it too much. But it makes sense to me that these kinds of topics would be harder to teach online than something like computer sciences.
Right. The technical aspects, the technical studies are easier because they're more straightforward, mm-hmm. I might say. And you're teaching how to program this, how to engineer that. And, you know, it's easier for the students to understand. The social sciences, humanities are more feeling,
right,
understanding.
And I've found, I was really focused on these types of classes in my schooling. I did liberal arts education, lots of history classes and philosophy and, you know, whatever, literature and so on. And in those kinds of classes, a lot of it comes down to class discussion and interaction and group projects and this kind of thing. So I can understand why this would be tricky for them to implement online.
Mm-hmm.
But what else have they – well, as we saw, they have had some success in this area – but they have other things to offer as well.
That's right. They also have been successful in teaming up with more colleges than any of its rivals, than any of the competition. And we see that they have a total of 9 different colleges that they've teamed up with. Some very high elite names there, including Princeton, Michigan, and the University of Pennsylvania.
In addition to Stanford that we already heard mm-hmm. about. So lots of great high-quality schools here.
Yeah, and I think they will continue to do this. They probably will add more schools as Ng and Kohler get more and more involved with this and develop more courses.
Okay, good. Let's continue our reading as we find out more about what makes Coursera a little bit different from the competition.
The timing's right. The most intriguing aspect of the Coursera endeavor, however, is how quickly it promises to expand beyond a niche audience. All of the factors pushing Coursera and its competitors toward the mainstream of higher education are now crashing together. For starters, the newly minted knowledge-based economy is hitting a global slowdown, causing a spike in demand for higher education as people seek to retrain. This demand is running smack into the reality of the escalating costs of going to college and the attendant rise in student loan debt, fueling anger and desperation among students and trepidation in parents. The technology has changed, too. Broadband access is growing even in poor and middle-income countries, making online education both easily accessible and far more functional. At least 600 million people now have the ability to stream video, compared with only 300 million in 2007.
So the timing is right for Coursera, and we continue with our reading today to learn about the most intriguing aspect of this endeavor, of this project.
Yeah. And what that is how quickly it promises to expand beyond a niche audience. So, and what we mean here is when we're talking about a niche audience, we're talking about a small group, specialist, not broad appeal. And we certainly saw right in the very first sentence of today's reading, Professor Ng has broad appeal, 104,000 enrollees. That is the opposite of a niche.
Okay. Mm. So we could say niche. It just, again, means that little sort of specialized area.
Mm-hmm.
And often when we do talk about online learning, we talk about, for example, well, I learned this language online through this company. And it's very, very specified, you know, like, well, they are the ones to learn Spanish from, you know, for example. But this is much, much broader. And so it's expanded beyond that kind of idea. As we continue, what do we learn?
We learn that all of the factors pushing Coursera and its competitors towards the mainstream of higher education are now crashing together. So they're coming together very quickly.
Okay, all of those factors. This is an interesting sentence. It kind of sounds like Coursera and its competitors are sort of moving along this road, but all of these things are sort of pushing them and everything is sort of happening at once. Which may be why so much has happened just in these past 6 months.
Mm. Yeah, and we see here when things are crashing together, it's not neat and tidy, and
right.
It could get messy here. And that's why I said earlier that this is all – it's still forming. It's in the formulation stage as far as where does online learning fit in and actually, you know, what is the long-term prospects for it? Will it take over for traditional schools? Well, we learn about some things so we see here for starters, and we get into some of the current factors.
Okay, good. So that first factor that we mentioned for starters?
As a newly minted knowledge-based economy is hitting a global slowdown. Now, when we say something is minted, it's just another word to say created. So newly created knowledge-based economy is dealing with a weak global economy.
Okay, so it's knowledge-based. What do we mean by the fact that our economy is knowledge-based?
Well, we're getting away from traditional manufacturing in many parts of the world, particularly like the United States and Europe,
right.
As far as they're not so much producing steel. Steel
yes.
mills are gone. And they're not so much, you know, producing other, you know, hard stuff like cars so much. But it's now about producing, how do we make better smartphones? How do we make better apps?
Right.
Things like that. That's the knowledge-based economy.
So you have to use your brain. You can't just use your strength anymore to get a mm-hmm. job. And just because you can push a button doesn't mean you get hired at a factory. So you really need to depend on your mind more, which is causing what?
A spike in demand for higher education as people seek to retrain. So here causing a sudden increase in demand for people to go and relearn something, like you said, to use their brain.
Right, to be competitive. Maybe they aren't able to continue in their old job and they need to find something new. But in order to do that in this economy, you actually need to go back to school and learn some new skills.
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, a lot of these people in the knowledge-based economy, very good people, actually lost their job after the 2008 mortgage meltdown, which has caused this recession. So a lot of really good, talented people have actually had to go back and retrain, learn new things.
Right. But there is another factor that's a problem here, isn't there?
That's right. We also do see that it is running smack into the reality of the escalating costs of going to college and the attendant rise in student loan debt.
Right. So people are still in debt from going to school the first time, and now they have to go back to school and get more debt. This is fueling anger and desperation, or adding fire to a problem that already exists of people being very nervous about money, especially students. And, of course, their parents feel the same way. Trepidation.
Yeah. Oh, they've got this trepidation. Trepidation is mean when you got fear, you got hesitation, you lack confidence in what it is that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So everyone is concerned about money, either from the end of, I don't have a job anymore, so I need a new one, or from the other side, well, I can't afford to pay for another degree here.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology has also changed, which is another factor that's crashing together with the ones we've mentioned.
That's right. We learned that broadband access is growing even in the poor and middle-income countries. So it's making online education both easier to have access to and definitely far more functional.
Okay. So easy to obtain and easy to work with.
Hmm.
There are students in Nairobi, Kenya, who can actually attend Professor Ng's class on machine learning. 10 years ago, this was unthinkable. Or not even in the capital of Kenya. They can be out in a village somewhere.
Or they can be like Christos Porios, who we met yesterday.
Yeah.
So, yes, including them, at least 600 million people now have the ability to stream video, which is twice as many as we're able to in 2007. So we're seeing all of these changes. So if you're one of these people, you had a job you liked, you lost your job, you need to find a new skill, but you can't afford college, but you have a computer, what do you do?
You start going online and seeing what you can learn.
Right. So it does make sense. But one of the things that concerned me was, well, how valid is this? I mean, can I put this on a resume? Will anyone pay attention? And that brings us to our sidebar for today.
Yeah. If everybody looks at the upper right column on page 35, now offering certification, our sidebar says hundreds of millions of people have viewed lectures from top universities for free online in the past 10 years. Okay. Amanda mentioned the TED conferences. I know, Naomi, you've watched things. I've checked some TED stuff out, some other things. But until now, what?
Well, these resources have been passive, like Wikipedia. You can go and pay attention to them and focus on what they're saying and learn something. But then what? And they explain more about what they mean by passive.
Right, they haven't been organized and sequenced for active learning or paired with social media tools. So they haven't really been accessible as easily for people to get at. But more crucially, which would be more importantly, they haven't been offered with certification.
Okay, so first of all, you're just sitting there taking in the knowledge. You didn't have a chance to really discuss it with people and learn together. But also, of course, no degree, no proof that you learned anything.
Yeah, it's not like I get a Bachelor of Science degree that I could put on my resume and say, oh, okay, I went to this school, here's my degree, which employers are going to look for. They're going to say, well, where did you graduate from? And if I said, well, I've watched a bunch of TED conferences,
right?
They're mm-hmm. going to be like, well, that's great, Bill, but don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah. Exactly. But according to Barbara Chow, who's an education program director at the Hewlett Foundation, what's happening?
That's beginning to change. For the first time, traditional universities are offering online courses, they will certify students and say that they have mastered the contents within these online programs.
Okay, so that is a big, big change. And to me personally, if I were considering the possibility of doing some online learning, that would make a really, really big difference between possibly signing up for something or not.
Well, this is significant because if you're going to be spending so much time online watching these things, it is helpful for you then. Okay, I want something that says, I passed this, you know, mm-hmm. course. I followed this course that you set out for me. I achieved something. So then I have something I can show to people that qualifies me.
Right. I think one of the issues with the possibility of just sitting there with you and your computer mm-hmm. is a lack of accountability. How do I know how much attention someone is even paying to
right.
the video?
Right. Yeah. And she also says here that it will certify that students have mastered the contents. My guess is that throughout this process, there is a way of testing the students
right.
to make sure, okay, you're not just passively sitting there, but you are being active and that you can actually show you have the knowledge.
Exactly. Well, there is more to learn about how Coursera is working, how all of these courses actually take place, and a lot more. So join us tomorrow for our final day of the Coursera Effect.